with Pikes and Bride.
Welcome to Nonstop Rock Talk. Really nice talking to you today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing, Tyson?
I am very well, thank you. Just getting through this staying home thing and trying to make the best of my time.
Yes, the staying home thing is it's kind of a little crazy, and you know, I don't know if you have any kids, but I got a 7-year-old, so you know, after about 3 weeks of that, it really gets crazy, especially when they tell you that there's no more school for the rest of the year. So you know, or, I mean, there is homeschool, but you know you're going to be in close quarters for the remainder till next school year. So it's okay though. You know, we'll get through it.
I mean, I have two kids, but they're back and forth between here and my mom's. So, and the thing is, it gets really boring when they're not here, actually, because it's just like,
yeah, you know, after they've been driving you crazy for days and hours on end and interrupting conference calls and everything, it's like, you know, he went to stay at his grandmother's house, and all of a sudden it's really, really quiet and kind of boring, and twiddling your thumb like, what would they do now?
So, you know, and it's like, usually it's like, okay, who can I video chat, or who can, you know, like, which is kind of nice that we have that technology now where you can video chat with someone, or, you know, or you just pick up the phone, right?
And as a matter of fact, that's what the band has been doing a lot of lately. Like, today, Thursdays are our normal practice days, and, you know, because we're on, you know, stay at home, you know, rules right now, that, you know, we still like to get together and talk and, you know, shoot the shit. So we'll get on Google Hangouts, and everybody's got video on, and we'll just, you know, talk about, you know, what we're going to do next and just shoot the shit, just to feel like we still got everything continue going, you know? So I kind of feel that's pretty important.
Oh yeah, totally. And I mean, I love that Hangouts thing. I mean, that's how I talk to my buddies, and, you know, I haven't done a video chat on it yet with them, but, I've done one on like, Facebook Messenger and whatnot. So, I mean, there's so many avenues.
Yeah, there is. And it's great to have that. I mean, I've done the Hangouts. I've got a buddy who is in Argentina, and you know, we use it, chat back and forth, talk about, he's helping us with some marketing stuff with the band. And, but yeah, it's awesome, you know, to have that ability. You know, even though we're going through all this, but there's still ways to get stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, remember when like the Jetsons, I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you remember the Jetsons.
Oh yeah.
And they used to talk to each other by video, and you're like, that's never going to happen.
Never going to happen. Yeah.
And sure enough, here we are now, right?
Which is, here we are.
Yes. So let's talk about, Asphalt Valentine. For those that don't know, kind of give me a little history of the band. I know it is a long story, but I mean, I think it's a really good story.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of give you the shorter version, but it's we've been around, as Asphalt Valentine for about 15 years now. So, you know, we started out in about 2005 or 6, and you know, we had a collection of songs, and we had signed with Bill Chavis on Chavis Records, and we have released our first full length in 2009 called Strip Rock Roll. And that did pretty good. We had a couple lineup changes, but in 2010, we really, were trying to hit the road, promote the record. So, you know, we spent, you know, I think it was about 3 months out on the road, you know, going from state to state, and then, you know, after that tour was over, we go back out and hit it for, you know, a long weekend, or, you know, a week at a time or so. And then, you know, things just, you know, with people in bands and stuff, you know, people kind of move on and they do their own thing. And, you know, we had really tried to promote the record, but I'm not sure that music at the time was really what was what people were interested in. Because we were just a really hard driving, kind of punkish attitude, kind of style. You know, and we did okay. You know, enough that you know, we decided to do another EP in 2014. It was only six songs, but, you know, we felt it was really strong. But, you know, we thought that we would try to do that on our own with no label. And I think that was kind of a mistake for us. You know, we really should have had that support of the family. But, you know, you live, you learn, you try things on your own. We thought it was a great record. We still do. We hope that with releasing our new record that just came out, that maybe people will go to our back catalog and check some of that stuff out. But really, it was kind of disappointing for us that, you know, we weren't doing as well as we were just because, you know, we didn't have the sales, we didn't have the label behind us, and, you know, our guitar player had moved to Myrtle Beach, so everybody just started moving, and it was like, what are we doing? You know, it was just kind of a little bit frustrating. And then, you know, so we weren't sure the direction of the music industry was going, but where we saw it going was people weren't doing full-length albums anymore. They were just doing singles and stuff. So, you know, we'd done the full-length, we'd done the EP, and we had done one single. So we said, you know, let's just try the single thing and try to do that. And we released a song called The Only back in, I think it was about 2017 as a single. My buddy that I was just telling you about from Argentina, he was doing a backpacking trip. He climbed the whole Andes Mountains on foot by himself, and he had contacted me to write him a song. So I did, and I thought it came out fantastic, and it was just so good that we kind of had to put it out there. And then I wrote Twisted Road just shortly thereafter, and we had recorded that actually back in early 2018. And we were going to release that as a single as well. But later that year, our guitar player had committed suicide. So we were all kind of up in arms, and we just had no direction. We didn't know where we were going to go. We didn't know if we were packing it up.
Yeah.
And then, so we weren't really doing a whole lot back then. But I'm sure y'all are very well the band Kick and Valentino. We're good friends with them. And they gave me a call because their singer at the time had abruptly quit on them. So they asked me to do some shows for them. I learned about 17 songs in 2 weeks, and I hit the road with them. And that feeling of being back out there and the camaraderie with, you know, other musicians and getting on stage, meeting the fans, I was like, oh my God, where has this been? I totally forgot about this. And as soon as I came back, I said, guys, we're not doing this single stuff anymore. We're going to put out a record. We're going to give it our full force. And so we began writing. We contacted Bill again, who's now running Highball Music. And he signed us, and here we are with a new record.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Highball Music, which the first album was on Chavez, but that's the same label, right?
Like, yeah, it's same owner, Bill. Yeah, he went through some changes. He, like us, you know, he was kind of a newer label at the time, and we were a newer band. And I think we all had to go through some changes in growing up, and he did that. We did that on our own. And, you know, he created Highball, and, you know, while we were, you know, crafting our sound a little bit more. So he's got a really good label, some great bands on there right now.
He does. And I really like the stuff that he's doing, especially the Every Mother's Nightmare stuff, how he's gone back and he's released some of their previous work, and the detail he puts into the vinyls, and like he did the green vinyl for that Every Mother for the Grind album, and that looks amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I bought a copy of it just for the simple fact that it was on, just to have that green vinyl, and I love it. So
He's got some really good ideas, and he's backing some people up around him, and you know, and kind of starting to think outside of the box a little bit more. And you know, Every Mother's Nightmare has been a great band for Bill to have on, and I think he just signed him on for another 5 years, so, which is really cool, because we got to play with them a couple of times back in October, and they're just the coolest guys, and we're a great fit to play some live shows with them. We can't wait to do that again tomorrow.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that like he's just, I mean, I've dealt with him a few times and he's been fantastic. And I interviewed Rick Rule, I think a couple of years ago, and he was really awesome, and they are good guys.
He's a really cool guy. I like him a lot.
Yeah. So you were speaking of The Only, and I watched the video, and the first scene is the gentleman, what was his name again? Sorry. From Argentina?
His name is Joey Shanka.
Okay. And that first scene of the video, and he's like, he's talking, and he's, what is he? He's more or less, there was a storm the night before, and the snow came in or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm just watching, yep. And I'm thinking, man, I don't know if I could personally do that. Like, honestly?
Yeah.
I just think I'm too much of a pussy, really. It's like, I don't think I could endure that.
I think most of us are. I've known Joey since high school. So I've known him for, 25 years or so. And, he's always been a good friend of mine. And his path took him after college just a totally different direction. He just decided that he was kind of going down a path that, was going to lead to nowhere good. And so he kind of found himself. He started out by hiking the whole Appalachian Trail here in the U.S. and the whole Rockies Mountains, and he'd write books about them. And then he went down to South America and did the whole Andes Mountains on foot. And that's when he contacted me while he was out there in a hostel, and he said he had some poetry in his head, and he sent it to me. And so that's when I wrote him the song. And then when we decided to do the video for it, I said, well, what are we going to do? We kind of did it on our own. We didn't know how it was going to do. So we wanted to film some of the band, but we had him send us just a ton of video that he shot himself while he was out there, hiking. So all that footage is him. He filmed himself. It's real. I mean, that's what he did. It's amazing.
Man, that's a life's journey. I gotta say, like, that is crazy.
He's just some people are like that, and more power to them, because I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I do too. I totally agree. Now, going back before the band, I'm kind of curious about your musical background. Like, what kind of drove you down the road of rock and roll? What kind of influenced you? I mean, being from Atlanta, there's so many great artists that have come out of that great city.
Yeah.
I mean, Butch Walker, Nathan Hudson, Blondes, Jackal, the Black Crowes. That's just a few of them, that are off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I'm just kind of curious as what kind of influenced you.
Well, honestly, I would have to say it really started, when I was 11 or 12. I got my first guitar then. And the album that was out at that time that had just come out was Use Your Illusion 1 and 2.
Cool.
And so you can imagine how cool I thought Flash was, with that guitar and all those guitar licks and everything like that. And that really just was, powerful to me. I mean, I always liked the music growing up. After the kind of Guns N' Roses era in the 80s era, I was more, I never went to the grunge scene. I kind of went more down the punk rock path. So I was really into Social Distortion Bad Religion and all that kind of stuff. And all the while, I still liked, Metallica and all the metal bands. And, I wasn't really playing. I played a little bit in bands in high school, but it was nothing really serious. And the bands that I did play in were more metal. And I didn't do anything for years. I don't think I picked up the guitar for, 3 or 4 years. And I wasn't a singer or a songwriter. I don't know what got in me to pick it up, but I just picked it up and I started writing some lyrics, and I felt that I could write the melodies to some lyrics, and that's kind of how I got started. So, I always went to shows around here. There's always great bands, local bands that were really good. And I'd find some musicians and, the old school way, you'd open up the local alternative newspaper and go through the ads and see who's looking for a guitar player. And, you know, so that's how you used to do it. Now you can kind of go online and find people. But, that's where I started, and that's just what it developed into now.
Yeah, I mean, that Guns album, I remember when that came out, and I think there was like a Rockline special on the radio. So they previewed the album, I think a few days before it came out. And I had a friend, and I was like, can you record that for me? And he did. He recorded the whole thing, and they played all these new tracks, and it just blew my mind. I'm like, I can't believe how good this stuff is. Like, I love.
I know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you didn't, I mean, Appetite was such a great record, so I was already a fan of Guns N' Roses. So the Use Your Illusion albums were a little bit different, but they were still, in my opinion, really strong, and they blew my mind as well.
Yeah, I've had this the conversation with someone before. I was like, could they have broken it down and only done one album and take the best cuts? But I don't think they could have. I think there was so much great material on it that I don't think they could have done that.
Yeah, I agree. It was worth doing two albums,
Yeah.
And it was neat to have both of them. And nobody really did that at that time either. No. So it was really cool to have.
Yeah, I remember my buddies, I lived in a smaller town, and my buddies, and we're trying to get, because we didn't have licenses. We were we might've been 16, but we didn't have access to a car. Like we couldn't, our parents had the cars. And so anyways,
oh, really?
We got to go get this. Like, we got to get it on the day it comes out. And we're asking people, can you take me into the next town so I can go buy this? That's what the times were like back then, though. Like, you were so excited when an album came out, because it's not like it's coming in the mail via Amazon or through the website. It's,
Well, I mean, that was my weekends, was going to Tower Records and just cruising, and you didn't even know what you were looking for. You were just cruising through, and you'd pick up a CD because the cover looked cool. And
yep.
Back then, you could say, hey, can I try it before I buy it? I don't know if you remember doing that.
Yeah.
And then, we had this one record store, Turtles, and they had the stamp. So, kind of like the more you buy, the more stamps you get, and then you get free stuff. So, it was cool. That was fun. Of course, everybody, I don't know if y'all had Columbia House back then. Get the 10 CDs for a cent and sign your dog up for it. But, I got a lot of CDs that way, too.
That's so funny, because I remember my parents wouldn't allow me. They're like, you're not doing that Columbia House thing. Like, it's a farce. I'm like, I don't think it is. So anyways, my buddy got the thing, and we clipped it out of the magazine, and he's like, we'll share it. So you buy two of the albums, and I'll buy two of the albums when we have to fulfill the membership or whatever it was. So then we got like 13 tapes for a penny, and they came, and then we divvied it up, and it all worked out well. My parents never knew, so.
Yeah.
They might know.
it was awesome. I don't see how they stayed in business for so long. I guess there were a few honest people out there, but once you signed up and, you're a teenager, you have no money to pay for when you're supposed to pay for it. You're like, okay, so I signed the dog up and the dog's getting CDs in the mail.
Well, it was so enticing, though, because you'd see those album covers in this ad and it's, say, a penny, and you're like, how can I go wrong for a penny, right?
Exactly.
It was such a cool thing. But
the artists are probably making more off that penny from 10 albums than, you will one stream on Spotify. So it's worked out better anyway.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I believe, from what I understand, is they used to press their own material. Like, they did.
Gotcha.
They had their, I guess they had the masters. And then, audiophiles now today, like people buying albums, If it's an album from Columbia House, people, they kind of tell you to stay away from it more than like the other pressing, because sometimes their pressings weren't as good, especially on vinyl.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, so I can understand how, like, yes, they did stay in business, but then now they're not in business, yeah, obviously. Right. So, let's get to Twisted Road.
Yeah.
The album's going to be named Twisted Road as well.
Yeah, the album is named Twisted Road. It actually came out on February 28th, and it was the way that Bill wanted to do it, which I thought was really cool, was for the first month, it was only available on physical CD. So we had a lot of people who were emailing, like, it's not on iTunes and this, that, and that. Like, you're going to have to buy a copy. Okay. And so it did finally come out on digital format on March 28th, so it's available everywhere now.
That's awesome. I'm going to, I honestly, until I didn't know the band, and I apologize for that, but there's just so many bands, I started listening to it, and I'm like, now I'm a fan, because I really like it. And
well, that's awesome. We appreciate it, because, you know, I've talked to Oliver a couple times, I think, on email in the past, and he, you know, hooked us up with some stuff. So, you know, we had a prior relationship with Sleaze Rocks before.
Sleaze Rocks,
and
yeah.
you know, you guys are always honest and do good stuff. So, you know, I'm glad you dig this stuff, you know, because I get what you're saying. There's so many bands out there, and we have to compete, you know, with all that. And everybody now can make a record because you can do it in your studio. But for us, the key is to get it sounding really good. So we have a full production studio in our rehearsal space. I mean, we got really good gear. So it's not all, you know, Pro Tools, you know, bass, you know, you plug your guitar into the computer. That's not how we do it. We, you know, we do amps, you know, we'll hook up the live drums, and, you know, we keep doing it till we get it right. And then we send it over, and we pay good money for our mixer and producer, Andy Riley, who's worked with some big name people. I mean, Bruce Dickinson he's worked with, and, you know, just old stuff. So he's really good. And, you know, if you want a really good product, you're going to have to, you know, pay Piper. And that's what we've done. And, you know, we feel that this came out really sonically good.
That's fantastic. So what is the scene for music like in Atlanta now?
Well, it's pretty tough. I would say about 10 years ago or so, maybe a little bit more, I mean, it was packed with local bands and people just going out to shows, not knowing who was playing. Over the years, the tribute band and the cover band phenomena has really taken over, and a lot of the clubs that have catered to, you know, local, independent, original music, they started shutting their doors. So there's still some places to play around, and people will go out, but I think, you know, right now the big thing is, you know, cover and tribute bands. And
yeah.
So we actually don't play here in Atlanta much. We'll do it maybe one or two times a year, just to make sure that we get enough people out that, you know, we don't want to oversaturate ourselves out here. But there's some really good venues that we've got that have been here for years that won't go away. So, you know, there's, when we play, people are excited. So, you know, there's a lot of metal here. You know, there's some indie music and, you know, obviously hip hop.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a little bit of everything. And everybody will go out and see, you know, anything, really.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I always like to ask, comparing, like, I live near Toronto, so Toronto's not really, it used to be. It used to be a great music scene, especially for hard rock back in the early 90s. It was, you know, it was very big, but it's just, as each year goes by, it seems to die down more.
Yeah.
I think,
you know, and when we go out on the road and play shows, it seems like all the fans in every town seem to have the same, you know, say the same thing. They're like, it's just not what it used to be, you know? So I don't know if it's because we don't know what's really going on, or if it, you know, and there's something else that we're just not hit to, right? Or if it really just isn't what it used to be. So, you know, and kids are kids, and they're always going to like music. I mean,
yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, I'll drive by the, well, it's sad that it's torn down, but there used to be a place called the Masquerade. It was here for years and years and years. It's an old cotton mill that they turned into a three-story stage venue.
Oh, cool.
And you'd be driving down, and you would not know who the hell was on the marquee, and there's a line of kids out. And that was just exciting to see. So
yeah.
It's still out there. You just got to look for it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, for live music here, a lot of it has to do with the regulations the government has put on, you know, taxes.
So like what kind of regulations do they put on it?
Like, just like, I mean, not really regulations, but for instance, a beer at a bar is expensive. So
yeah.
People can't afford to go out for the whole night and be drinking beer at the bar all night.
Yeah.
For the most part, I mean, I'm sure in Atlanta you probably can't smoke in a bar anymore. I don't know if you can or not, but here, probably about 15 years ago, maybe they used to have like smoking rooms in the bars, and then the government
said,
oh no, you can't have that anymore. So everybody's
going
outside. It's just, they've really made it hard for the bar owners that are trying to book bands to like, to make money. And it's
yeah, that and I think you're right. That might have something to do with it too. And honestly, that phenomena happened here too. It started out with certain cities going smoke free, and then you know, for the most part, there was one or two that were holding out. But you know, you can't really do that. I think for the most part, though, drinks, beers, and stuff like that, they haven't really shot through the roof. So if you want to cheat PBR or something, which, you know, I would have a very bad hangover the next day. But you can still get those for like $2 or $3. So it's not too bad. But I get what you're saying. Yeah, if you got 4 or 5 bands playing, you know, it's tough to go out and see all of them, you know. Yeah. So it's, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's just, you know what? Maybe it'll come back. Who knows? Like, it would be, I would love to see that where, you know, everywhere it's just live music again and rock and roll. And,
it's, well, what you're seeing now is everybody doing it live from their basement.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's going to continue to carry on, you know, even after this is all over, that people say, you know, hey, we can still bring fans in that way. I personally don't think I think it's a crutch and it's good for right now. You know, fans want to do it, but, you know, for the most part, you know, it's all about getting out there and engaging and interacting with the fans. It really is.
I mean, I could see it where people, there's going to be an influx of people out. If come the summertime and they're like, okay, everybody can start going out, hopefully, maybe, I've heard like two conflicting things on it, like everybody's going to still be cautious, or is everybody just going to go nuts and be like, I'm going out and we got to go out because we've been in the house for so long.
I think everybody's going to go nuts, and all the bands that need to make money they're going to be knocking on the promoter's door, and they're going to be knocking on the bar's owner's door, and it's going to be, I think there's going to be a lot of choices. A lot of people are going to be overwhelmed at which show they need to go to because it's been so long and everybody's going to be out there playing. Yeah.
I mean, for me, I more or less, all day is spent like besides doing my podcast and getting ready for it, because I've had a ton to do and it's been amazing. But other than that, I'm watching live shows on YouTube and like whatever I can get, just stuff I would never sit down and watch. And then it's like, oh, check this out. You know what I mean? And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, well, it's a good time for people who got nothing better to do to discover Asphalt Valentine. That's for sure.
That's right. And I mean, I did too, because I mean, because in indirectly because of that. So that's a good thing as well. So
yeah, it is.
I'm going to let you go in a second, but we should make mention of the other members in the band.
Yeah. Do you want to know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we got, well, me, I'm one of the original members, founding members. Scott Clark, who is the bass player, he is original founding member as well. Then we have Brett Caramella on rhythm guitar. He'll play a little bit of leads here and there. He is our old school bluesy rock and roller. But he's been in the band pretty much since the beginning. I'd say maybe he missed a year or so. Mm-hmm. And then we have Brian Jung, who is on the drums. He joined, I would say, about 3, maybe 4 years ago. So he helped write this whole record, and he's been a great addition to the band. I mean, just his attitude and his, you know, all of our, you know, just our humor and stuff. We all get it, and that's why we've been together so long. For lead guitar, for the record, we had Evan McKee do all the lead guitar. And he was actually in the band back in 2010 and doing all that touring with us. But he had left, and he's been in San Francisco. So that was a little challenging doing this record with him all the way out there. But we got it done. But we need a local guy. We've got a guy, Daryl, who has been with us since November. And he was so excited to get out and play some shows that we had on the books in March, and you know, so we'll just have to wait. But that's the lineup right now.
Fantastic! That's great. Before I do let you go, is there anything else you want to mention about Asphalt Valentine? Anything? Hopefully, do you guys have any upcoming shows? Once this is over, was anything in the summer?
No. Yeah, as far as shows go, we don't have anything that you know, on the books. There's a lot of irons in the fire. I think one of the shows that we were supposed to be playing in Baltimore, which was the Baltimore or the Ballroom Blitz, that was a 2-day festival kind of thing. They had some pretty awesome acts on it, like Bisto Blanco and Last in Line, and so it's going to be really fun to play that, and I think that's being rescheduled. So hopefully we'll be on that. I'm not sure the exact date, but that will remain to be seen. But as soon as this is lifted up, that is our number one focus, is to book shows and get out there. And we will put all that information out on our Facebook, which is just facebook.com/AsphaltValentine. And then we have our AsphaltValentine.com website. So we'll be blogging and put all that stuff out there. And, you know, just be on the lookout for the record. We've got some new T-shirts and hats that we'll be selling soon. So we got a lot coming up. New video for Twisted Road is going to be coming out here soon. So we're going to be very busy. And we can't wait for everybody to see it.
Fantastic. Is it released on vinyl or it's not?
So vinyl is it's in the talks. So we'll have to just see how the record sales go, because vinyl is expensive to do. So it's got to make sense. And obviously we want to do vinyl, but the ultimate, you know, decision will come to Bill at Highball Music. So, you know, if we see vinyl, we see the record's doing good. Hopefully we'll get it out there.
Okay. That's good to know. I'm going to tell all my friends then, so they go and buy it, and then it'll get...
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like it.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, Joe, well, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it, and you have yourself an amazing night and a good Easter weekend.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Tyson. It was great talking to you, and you stay safe and have a great Easter as well.
You too, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, talk to you. Bye.
Okay, bye.